In 1860, 3-year-old Saville Kent went missing from his bed. He was found brutally murdered in the outside toilet of the English manor at Road Hill. Everyone was under suspicion. The nursemaid who was in the same room, his parents and stepbrothers and sisters. At the same time as Saville's murder was under investigation, crime fiction was becoming popular. It was at this time too that the role of the real-life detective was being created. And it's the detective who was central in putting forward the solution to the puzzle of this case. Mr. Witcher, he's the detective on whom the British crime fiction detective was based. Kate Summerscale's book, The Suspicions of Mr. Witcher, revisits the case. Last year it won the BBC 4 Samuel Johnson Award for non-fiction. In it, Kate unravels the evidence of the case, but it's written like a murder mystery, so you have to keep reading to find out who done it. At the Sydney Writers' Festival, the book show's Sarah Lestrange spoke to Kate Summerscale and asked her why she approached it as a murder mystery.
I came to the idea of using the devices of detective fiction and structuring it like a mystery novel fairly late on, kind of halfway through the research and thinking and planning about the book. And part of the reason it made sense was because I realised as I was researching what a huge influence this particular case had on the origins of detective fiction. So it seemed a very sort of fitting form. And also it allowed me to maintain the suspense and drama of the story and to keep some sort of narrative momentum going in the same way that thrillers and detective novels do.
In all the research that you did you ever find yourself mired like a detective with all of this evidence around you, some of it intriguing but not relevant?
It was fun to sort of play with the ideas of how that researching history and writing non-fiction is a little bit like detective work, in that you've got a mass of facts. Some of the material that you gather as red herrings, you know, false leads, and it all lies in how you organise it, what use you make of the clues that you've found. And so, like a detective, putting together a hypothesis with a book, you come up with a plot, a narrative, even with a non-fiction book, and you choose how to tell the story and which story to tell, which is essentially what a detective does. Mm-hmm. And he tries to tell the best story, the truest story.
So much is known about the intimate details of where the murder took place, the house's interior, the family's routine, because of the court cases, the police reports, and the news articles that reported the investigations. This is Kate Summerscale reading from a short section of her book that describes the night before the murder takes place.
Once the children were asleep, Elizabeth Gough tidied the nursery, restoring a stool to its place under her bed, returning stray objects to the dressing room. She lit a candle and sat down in the dressing room to eat her supper. That night she had only bread, butter and water. Then she joined the rest of the household downstairs for evening prayers, led by Samuel Kent. She also took a cup of tea with Kerslake in the kitchen. "I don't usually have any tea at all," Gough said afterwards, "but I did that day take a cup from the general family teapot." When she went back up to the nursery, she said, Saville was lying, as he usually did, with his face to the wall, with his arm under his head. He was wearing a nightdress and a little flannel shirt. He was, she said, a very heavy sleeper and had not been to bed in the daytime that day, and so slept all the sounder. She had been busy cleaning the room in the afternoon when he usually had his nap. The nursery, as Gough described it, was a place of softness, hushed and muffled with fabric. The room is carpeted all over. The door opens very noiselessly. It is bound round with list to make it do so, that I might not wake the children. Mrs. Kent agreed that the door opened and closed quietly, if pushed and pulled with care, though the handle squeaked a little when turned. Later visitors to the house detected the rattle of a metal ring on the door and the creak of the latch.
Kate Summerscale reading from her book, The Suspicions of Mr. Witcher. The details she describes would have been common knowledge at the time because there was detective fever about this case. Why was it so popular?
It was a very horrific crime, and it took place in a middle-class household, and it concerned a child. I think those were the three key elements that made it so sort of intriguing and horrifying to the public, combined with the fact that the media had recently sort of expanded, so there was a huge boom in crime reporting and newspapers, which made all the information available in tremendous detail at great speed to unprecedented numbers of people. But the fact that it was a three-year-old boy who was murdered, that he was taken from his bed in a respectable middle-class home, a fine country house, in fact, and that it was clear that it was a member of his household who had killed him, either one of the servants, perhaps the nursemaid who'd been in the nursery with him, Elizabeth Gough, on the night that he was killed, or perhaps one of his parents or one of his half-siblings who slept on the top floor of the house. That made it all particularly sort of gripping, like a murder mystery. Although the murder mystery as a genre didn't really exist in the form we know it now. And as I researched, I realised that this case had actually helped generate indirectly the stories of Agatha Christie and P.D. James and so on.
As you say, at this time, the murder took place in 1860, and seemingly in parallel, crime fiction was becoming a genre. What sorts of crime writing was around at that time?
Before this case, there had been the short stories of Edgar Allan Poe, which were published in the early 1840s at around the time of the creation of the detective force, so at Scotland Yard. So the beginnings of crime fiction and of detectives, in fact, were simultaneous. And then there were quite a lot of racy action stories about detectives chasing criminals across the countryside that were published in magazines, sold at railway booths. And there was, and Wilkie Collins started to write in the sort of mysterious novels, and Charles Dickens wrote Bleak House, which featured Inspector Bucket, who was a police detective modelled on Witcher's boss and probably Witcher himself as well. So those were the kinds of things around, but the first full detective novel that with the kind of classic structure that we think of today actually grew out of this case. It came afterwards, and that was Wilkie Collins' The Moonstone.
And you say this book is very much modelled on this Roadhill murder case. What are those elements that he just sort of plucked from this story?
One striking thing is that Sergeant Cuff, the police detective in the story, who goes down to the country house to solve the crime, is closely modelled on Jack Witcher. And in terms of the plot of the book, it's sort of watered down in a way, in that the crime in The Moonstone is the theft of a precious jewel instead of the murder of a boy. But the trail of evidence in The Moonstone, as in the Roadhill house murder, concerns things like sort of missing night dresses, laundry lists that don't quite tally, and a lot of the atmosphere and themes of the book, the intrusion of the detective into the middle class household, the defensiveness of the family, the behaviour of the servants, all of those draw on the case.
And what elements of Mr. Witcher himself? He became representative of the quintessential detective in a way. What elements of his character were translated then in fiction?
Witcher did seem to me to be like a prototype for the modern detective hero. He was ordinary looking, so deceptively, the kind of man you wouldn't really notice, and not particularly glamorous, rather cryptic, a little bit enigmatic, secretive, slightly haunted by his own past, and concealed beneath the kind of ordinary exterior, a very sort of imaginative and daring mind for kind of constructing hypotheses and so on, and also a big boldness with his hunches, a real sort of sureness about what he believed was true. So all those things, a sort of quiet outsider who stands on the sidelines and yet gets at the truth.
It was at this time, after the 1860s, that the debate about whether crime fiction was high or low art began. it was argued that the literary detective was not welcomed into the Republic of Letters. At least, this was the Scottish novelist Margaret Oliphant's view.
Yes, it was sort of from the off, really. There was a kind of aura of excitement and seediness around the whole genre, largely because people were so drawn to it. And I think that Margaret Oliphant's suspicion of it was based partly on the fact that the early crime fiction did draw so directly on real crimes. So it was the same kind of unease about how excitedly people read about crimes in the newspapers attached to the way they read about crimes in fiction, because they were very often the same crimes that were being alluded to, and the same kind of prurient and rather macabre instincts were being appealed to. And this did make the likes of Mrs. Oliphant very, very uneasy.
Just as crime fiction was burgeoning as a genre, Kate Summerscale delights in unravelling the origins of the language of the murder mystery that also began in this period. For instance, was it going to be foot tracks, footmarks, or footprints?
Words like lead and hunch were first used at around this time, and there was also the red herring that was used a little bit in the 1870s, and the word clueless was first used very soon after the Roadhill murder. The thing that set me on the trail of thinking about the words that were used and when they came into being was the word clue, which was often spelt C-L-E-W in the newspaper reports and editorials at the time. And I wondered why, and discovered that it's because our word clue is derived from the word clue, C-L-E-W, meaning a ball of string or yarn, and that the way the word transmuted from one meaning to the other is because of the ball of yarn that Theseus used to get out of the labyrinth, the Minotaur's labyrinth in the Greek myth. And so it was a way of getting out of a sort of puzzle, of a riddle, of when you found yourself lost, you followed the clue and you escaped, you found release. And I noticed that when they used the word, they used it as if it really, the clue was something that was unravelled and that was followed in a very vivid way.
At the end of your book, you include a sort of footnote of your own reaction to reading the coroner's report of Savile Kent's murder. Reading it shocked you, even though you'd just been sifting through all of this material. What was so shocking about reading this very vivid description of how he was murdered?
When I was researching and writing the book, I realised when I read the description of his murder and his attempts to sort of shield himself from the murderer's attack, how I had forgotten him sort of repeatedly in researching and writing the book, and that it's part of what happens when you read detective fiction as well, or when you get involved in trying to solve a case in your mind that you read in the newspapers, that you turn these really horrific and extraordinarily sad and poignant stories into intellectual puzzles, and that the detective is a figure who helps you do that in fiction. When you read, the detective kind of takes you away from the horror of the death and instead takes you to a more comforting place where you're trying to solve it like a riddle, like a puzzle. And so I wanted to record the fact that this is what happens as something that is interesting and also a little bit sad, and made me feel some shame at how easy it had been to forget the murder of the little boy that had set this whole story in motion.
You also quote Raymond Chandler, who said that the detective story is a tragedy with a happy ending.
One of the reasons I ended with that Chandler quote was it sort of tied in with going back to the image of the little boy being murdered, that I wanted to resist my book being quite a tragedy with a happy ending, because it's true. You know, it's a true story, and so I wanted to remind myself and the reader that it was true, and the ending is not happy.
Kate Summerscale was a Man Booker Prize judge in 2001. This was the year that Peter Carey won with The True History of the Kelly Gang. There's a lot of mystery about how these prizes are awarded and judged. I wondered if it was also a mystery for Kate before she began the process.
Yes, I had no idea, you know, exactly what it would entail or how the meetings would unfold. But it was a fascinating process. I had to read a lot of books, more than 100, and then it was very, because you couldn't discuss the books with anyone other than your fellow judges, and you didn't meet the other judges for months. By the time you did meet them, there was a very sort of feverish, excited atmosphere with everyone wanting to have their say and push forward their favourites. It was really interesting, and I think we came to a good result. Of course, not everyone agreed all along the way, but it was pretty decisive, and I certainly was keen for the Peter Carey to win, and so it was a satisfying outcome for me.
I can imagine, as people have different readings of the solution to the crime in The Suspicions of Mr. Witcher, you might be surprised at what other people think are really, really great books that should be put forward but you don't agree with.
Yes, and it's a strange process, because arguing about which books are better than other books is a weird situation to be in, because you're not really going to have your mind change. You're not going to be argued into loving something. You might be argued into thinking, well, maybe I, you know, overlooked some qualities and got something wrong, so perhaps it deserves a place on the long list or even the short list. But really, the prize is about a book that people feel passionate about. All book prizes should be, and really love. So all the arguing in the world isn't going to make you love something that you didn't love when you read it. But somehow the process kind of works, you know, works out. And I wouldn't say that the best books are rewarded every year, but really good books are. So it's good enough. Mm.
And sometimes detectives just know who done it.
Yes.
Kate Summerscale there, speaking to the book show's Sarah Lestrange. And the book she's written is The Suspicions of Mr. Witcher, and it's published by Bloomsbury.